people wouldn't have thought twice about accepting work that would boost their image. But we still can't tell anyone just how much you helped, he said, after long moments. And that's what I hate, the dishonesty, holding back secrets, though I truly don't think any domains have been broken here. I just worry others might misread it. I can certainly understand why you'd worry about that. Catching my tone, he stood up and patted my shoulder. Stay strong, Tamsin. You're doing wonderfully here. Although, I have to ask, was there any reason you mentioned staying up all night to copy scripture? Were you just using it as a random example of punishment? I didn't answer immediately, but something in my expression or body language must have given me away. Tell me, he said gently. I sighed. Well, it started with the paper you gave me. He listened to me recount Damaris's story, his face remaining neutral. I see, he said when I finished. Well, I'm sure Dinah thought she was doing what was best for you girls. He sounded doubtful, though. Do you think it was best? It's not my place to say. Your dependence in her household. Decisions about your well-being are in her domain. Here. He handed me some blank paper from the stack I'd been using to replace the last batch. I started to reach for it and then felt angry on his behalf. Dinah should give back what she took. I'm not going to undermine her authority. I scrutinized his mild expression, trying to discern the truth. But you do think she was out of line. Do you want it or not? He moved his hand to take the paper, but I was faster and snatched it away. Oh, I'll take it. But I do hate that you're wasting yours on me, especially when I've got plenty in my luggage. This would be so much simpler if I could just get into it.
I don't think it's a waste, and it's better that the cargo remain undisturbed. Aside from the council's decision about it, constantly getting in there and rifling for this and that would be a hassle.
Hoping for casualness, I asked, Are the goods that hard to get to? I know exactly where the paper is in my trunk.
Finding your trunk might be the difficult part. It's all spread out in different places.
Wait, I didn't realize our things weren't all being stored together. I hope none of it gets misplaced.
No, no, it's quite secure, and the council has a list of how many boxes and trunks are being kept where. Some's in the meeting house, some in the school. I can't recall the rest, but they're all safe places.
After collecting the rest of the pages, he walked over to the mantel and surveyed the books atop it. He plucked out a slim volume and handed it to me.
This is my own copy of the Reuven Followers. It's where a lot of our ideas about the domains came from. Take a look at it in your free time.
Free time? I could barely say it with a straight face, and as if to emphasize how far-fetched that notion was, Dinah suddenly entered. She put her hands on her hips.
Tamsin, I could really use your help washing some bedding. You've spent quite enough time lounging around out here, and worse, you're distracting poor Gideon. I knew this wouldn't end well. Gideon, if she hasn't finished copying, I'll do it for you.
Gideon gave her a beatific smile, and it almost knocked her over. Damaris was right.
No need, Dinah. Tamsin's done plenty. She's done more than I imagined.
He stood up and looked me over, and the spark in his eyes seemed to come from more than just his new and improved sermons. She's more than I imagined.
Chapter 13. By the end of that snowbound day, I was more exhausted than if I'd done my usual laundry regimen. But oh, that house sparkled. Dinah had had a scrub and polish every corner of it. When I dragged myself up for bedtime, the other girls immediately noticed the new paper.
How'd you get that? Asked Winifred.
I set it and the book down. Gideon gave it to me when he heard what Dinah did. Damaris winked.
Nice work. Remember, it's for the greater good.
He gave you a book, too? Vanessa perked up. What kind?
What kind do you think, around here? I held up the Reuven Followers. It's not a book of sonnets, and he lent it to me.
I didn't need my friends to warn me about protecting the paper. I slid it under my mattress, keeping one piece out for that night's letter. When I finished it, I held it a moment, wondering when it and the others I'd been accumulating would ever get out of this town. Who could say? I didn't even know when I'd get out. I hid the letter with the paper and used my last bit of free time to read Gideon's book in bed. While it did lay out some of the domains, the sections he'd underlined tended to be about helping others and improving one's character. It was like peeking into his mind, which seemed to imagine a purer way of life that didn't require so much of the air's strictness. "He's wasting his time here," I thought. "We all are." "We won't be going to church today." Samuel's somber face was even more somber than usual as he delivered that greeting the next morning. Gideon, also subdued, explained. "We didn't quite finish clearing the road yesterday, and then we got a little more snow last night. Nothing like that storm, but enough to be a nuisance. The carriage might get stuck." He looked so crestfallen, I couldn't stop myself from blurting out, "Could we walk? I don't mind." Vanessa gave me a horrified look.
"I considered it," said Samuel, "but some places still have more than a foot of snow. It'd make for hard travel, especially in your dresses. So, Eurose's will is what it is. We'll have a devotional day at home."
Winifred peered at the empty kitchen table. "When's breakfast?"
"No breakfast on holy days," said Dinah. "We don't eat until midday."
As that depressing thought settled over us, the faint jingle of bells suddenly sounded from outside. The other girls looked puzzled, but I knew immediately what it was. Samuel moved swiftly to the door, and we scurried in his wake. He flung the door open just as Jago pulled his sleigh up in front of the house.
"Good morning, good sirs and misses."
Jago bowed with a flourish before hopping to the ground.
"I thought you might be stranded, so I came to help you get to church today."
Stunned silence fell. At last I asked, "For how much?" He grinned.
"This one's on me."
Samuel's shocked expression slowly transformed to one of wonder.
"Why, Jacob, you have no idea how thrilled I am to hear you'll finally be attending services, though I don't think it's appropriate to wear that flamboyant scarf into church. We focus on the spiritual, not the material."
"Oh, yes, I'm aware of that. But I'm afraid I'm not actually going into the church, just taking you, since I know how important it is to you. I'll find other ways to amuse myself while you're busy."
Samuel's brow furrowed, but Gideon preempted any protest.
"As you said, Samuel, Eurose's will is what it is, and it looks like it has provided for us."
We quickly fetched our coats and cloaks. Samuel and Dinah sat in the front seat with Jago, while the rest of us piled into the hold in the back, which could have held a few more people. Then we were off to town, the sleigh nimbly flying over the snow. The only thing that slowed us was a fallen limb across the road, but it was soon moved.
"You've done two good deeds, Jacob, one upon the other," Samuel remarked when we arrived.
He paused to help Dinah down.
"It's given me hope that something might be changing within you, that the truth might be speaking to you after all. Are you sure you won't join us?"
Jago politely declined again and held out his hand to the rest of us girls. Vanessa, Winifred, and Damaris rewarded him with pretty thanks and well-honed glittering court smiles as they alighted. When it was my turn, I whispered,
"What are you playing at?"
"What do you mean?"
I held back as the others shuffled into the building.
"You know what? You don't do anything out of pure altruism.
Except that time I saved you from wandering off in a blizzard. And if you must know, you're also the reason I came by today."
"Whatever for?"
I stroked the mane of one of his horses, hoping it would look like they'd been the distraction. They were a lovely team, silvery grey with black manes and tails.
"I've been thinking about your sad, sad situation, and I decided to help."
I spun around.
You'll sell the seats?
No, of course not. But I might be able to get you someone else's space.
Whose?
There's a trapper who lives near the Ikori border. They like him. He's traded with them. And he's sending some furs down with the expedition. We're old friends. I could probably talk him into postponing his shipment. I'm pretty good at deal-making, you know. But it'd cost you.
Of course it would. Knowing what I knew about him now, I wasn't surprised.
How much do you want?
Not me. I'm doing this out of the kindness of my heart.
But my guess is it'll run what you and I were discussing. About 100 gold or so. Up front.
That's a lot of money.
Aren't you sitting on all sorts of wondrous objects?
Not literally. It's all locked away.
No one stood near us, but I dropped my voice.
I don't suppose you'd want to break into the meeting house for me, would you?
He scoffed.
With you?
Yes.
For you?
No. I'm barely tolerated as it is around here. If they caught me breaking in alone, there's no telling what they'd do.
Are you saying it'd be better if you were caught with me?
Well, then I could claim ignorance and say you'd asked me to help and that I did it unwittingly. And if that doesn't work, I'll at least have company in the stocks.
I couldn't acknowledge anything so ridiculous, so I turned toward the church.
Wait, Tamsin.
What? I asked warily.
Jago leaned close to me, like he was adjusting the horse's bridle. If the weather's clear, they'll let you go outside and get some air during the luncheon. I'll wait behind the meeting house. Before I could question that incredible statement, Dinah ordered me into the church. Jago climbed into the sleigh with a wink, and I hurried to Dinah, rattling off excuses about admiring the lovely horses. The Coles, as a minister's family, had a designated pew near the front of the congregation, but my companions and I were sent to the back rows. I didn't mind this at all, as it gave us a reprieve from Dinah's watchful eye. Several other Glittering Court girls had made it through the snow and sat nearby, so we had a small reunion until we were shushed when the service began. It opened with announcements and short prayers, and my mind wandered, wondering if Jago had been serious about helping me. I believed he was. What I didn't know was why. I set those musings aside when Gideon took the podium. His sermon lasted almost a full hour, and it was one of the ones I'd revised for him. As strange as I found the airs, it was a thrill to have my words delivered to such a large crowd. And he delivered them well. I'd seen him falter and stammer when he was unsure of himself, but when he was confident in his message, he was a commanding force. The warmth and genuineness that infused his everyday actions amplified his words and made others want to listen. And his face alone made some of them want to listen too, if my companion's dreamy expressions were any indication. Seeing the uplifting effect his closing had on the congregation made me swell with pride, for him and, yes, me. The program that followed was far less inspiring, a mix of community business, small prayers and lectures. It was a relief when recess was called for the luncheon, but it left me with the sudden decision of what to do about Jago. The congregation rose and stretched their legs, some going to help set up the food and others walking outside.
Thank goodness, said Damaris, rubbing her back. I thought I'd faint with hunger.
My eyes fell longingly on the food table, but from what I could gather about the process, we wouldn't be among the first served. Quickly, I refastened my cloak.
Cover for me. If anyone asks where I am, say I went out to walk to get some air until we could eat.
3 astonished faces stared at me.
What else would you be doing? Asked Vanessa.
Just help me, I hissed, squeezing between the benches. I'll explain later, baby. After the stuffiness of the packed church, the frigid cold hit me with a jolt, sharpening my thoughts and making me reconsider my choice. Staying in the church was warmer and wiser. As I wavered at the building's threshold, a group of small children scampered past, their laughter stirring the old ache in my heart.
Could I pass up any chance to get to Mary faster? I plunged forward, trying to look as casual as the others, who mingled and walked about the square. No one paid me a special attention, and I easily slipped unnoticed from the open area to a more private section behind the church's neighbouring buildings. Constance's meeting house, I'd learned, was a recent addition. Early settlers had used the church for all gatherings, and it wasn't until the town had flourished more that a proper hall had been commissioned. By then, the square was ringed with other businesses, and so the meeting house was being built two blocks away, some of its timber still only sealed and not painted. A few snowflakes drifted by, and I squinted upward, panicked. But the clouds that stretched overhead were white, only lightly tinged with grey. There was no sign of the dark, billowing masses that had marched across the sky during the blizzard. Exhaling, I continued on, and didn't see a soul, until I rounded the back corner of the meeting house. There, Jago waited for me, his lanky form leaning near a window. "I didn't think you'd come," he said. "I didn't think you would either. I thought you might be tricking me." "Not about breaking the law."
"I've heard you break the law quite a bit."
"Have you?" He straightened up and looked supremely pleased.
"I don't break it so much as bend it."
I studied the imposing building. "Yes, I heard that too. Does that mean you can get us in without doing anything illegal?"
Not so much."
He shoved his hands in his coat's pockets and followed my gaze. For all their talk about focusing on character and morals, they're not a very trusting lot. These windows are locked from the inside, and breaking the glass out would be noisy. So how do we get in? With great drama, Jago pulled a keyring from his pocket. "Through the door."
"You have a key. Why didn't you just mention that earlier?"
"Well, I didn't have it then." After trying a few keys in the small back door, he finally found one that let us inside. "One of the councilmen was so moved by my generosity in getting you all to town today that he kindly lent me use of his stables and kitchen while I waited. And it just so happens he owns one of the town's master keys."
"And he kindly lent it to you?"
"I found it after a little exploration of the rest of his house."
"Did he kindly lend you use of the rest of the house?"
"He didn't prohibit it," Jago said slyly. "And of course I'm bringing this back. No harm done." Considering I'd solicited his services to sneak in here, I suppose I couldn't judge. Much of the meeting house's interior still remained unfinished. The walls hadn't been sanded, and rushes covered the floor. A long table sat on a dais at one end, and partially constructed shelves occupied a back wall. And near those shelves, I spotted a pile of goods from the Grey Gull. I hurried forward, relieved to find such a big hall. I'd been half afraid that the cargo would be so thinly spread out around town that only a few things would be stored here. Better still, none of the crates and trunks before me appeared to belong to the crew or other passengers. They were all either Jasper's or one of the glittering court girls. The few unlocked trunks contained personal possessions of no use to me. The crates of trade goods were nailed shut, but Jago and I managed to get a few open using tools from the shelving construction. Jago lifted a pink silk dress up to the light.
"Looks like you can replace the one you gave away."
"Six, Jago. Just when I was starting to give you the benefit of the doubt. I can't wear pink with my hair."
"You can wear anything."
He held the dress beside my face.
"And what's this about starting to give me the benefit of the doubt? I thought we had an understanding."
I pushed the dress away and said, "Want to take it to your trapper friend?" Jago studied me a moment, well aware I'd dodged his question.
"Tempting, but no."
He folded the dress up with more care than I would have expected and set it back down. "Lewis is like me, won't want to deal with large objects that might take time to sell. Jewelry's still best. It's small and easy to convert."
"We should have plenty of that."
I searched through the next crate and found it filled with books.
"Wow, I had no idea Jasper was selling these."
"It's smart.
They're not rare in Adoria, but not nearly as common as they are in Aspirit, either. Lots of folks would love to build up their libraries. I lifted up a leather-clad novel I'd heard of, but never read. It was a popular romantic adventure, and the book just fit in one of my cloak's inner pockets.
"Are you stealing that?" asked Jago in mock horror.
"Borrowing it for Vanessa.
I hope that lot appreciates what a good friend you are. What's that look for? Are you laughing?"
I was. After collecting myself, I explained.
It's funny, that's all. There was a time, not even that long ago, that I think they would have been shocked to hear me called their friend, and I'd have felt the same about them. But yes, we've become friends.
Did that happen before or after you started looking out for them?
That one gave me pause, too. After, I suppose.
And you helped them because...
Not everyone needs an ulterior motive, I said sharply.
Of course not. I'm just trying to understand how you think, why you'd step up for people who, if I'm reading you right, used to not like you.
I pulled off the next lid.
I stepped up for them because someone had to.
This crate held more dresses, but underneath them was a trove of accessories, including a jewelry box. We broke the padlock and then knelt beside each other as we spread the box's contents over the floor. He regarded it all with a practiced eye and began separating pieces out.
This is costume. So is this. This one's silver, but the gems are glass. That's genuine. This one's costume.
I knew the jewellery we'd wear out in Cape Triumph was real, but I also knew most of it was already safely there, used from year to year. New additions to the collection that were especially valuable travelled in Jasper's own luggage. This cash must be what he was selling, and I hoped there were enough authentic items to make up Jago's price.
"This," he said, after much shuffling and mumbling. "This would do it."
The set he waved to contained 5 necklaces, 2 bracelets, and 4 rings, all gold with differing gems.
"That's worth 100 gold. A little over, to cover differences in trade and exchange."
"Done," I said. Jago regarded me with amusement.
"No hesitation, huh?"
"It's a small price to get us all back quickly." I frowned. "Assuming the Ikori honour Orla's offer. What if they don't?"
"I'll need to confirm it all with her, but if that's what she said she'd do, then she'll do it. She's a stickler for honesty and integrity."
He spoke with an admiration that seemed contradictory, given his own dubious morals.
"Which, I admit, is part of why I'm even doing this."
"What do you mean?"
"Orla doesn't much like Ospridians. Can't say I blame her, given her experience."
Carefully, he began placing the rejected jewellery back in its box. "And yet, she thought well enough of you to suggest this."
"She must think well of you too, to sell you passage in the first place." "Believe it or not, most people outside of Constancy think well of me. Some even like me. I've done a lot of travelling, a lot of trading. You get more done by making friends, not enemies."
He scooped up the remaining jewellery and held out a necklace adorned with emeralds.
"What about this? Green would look good on you."
"Green looks great on me, but I think the Coles might have a few things to say about me wearing that around the house, or anywhere in Constancy. I honestly can't believe no one's taken that scarf away from you yet."
"No law broken in wearing it. It's just frowned upon."
He straightened the last crate and strolled to the back door with me.
"They think I wear it because I'm vain."
"Are you?"
"I wear it because it's warm. And yeah, maybe I do like the flair a little. Everything I had growing up was a hand-me-down. So faded you couldn't tell what their original colour used to be."
"Same here," I said. "We got the neighbours' handoffs, mended them for me, and then patched them up again for my sister."
"Lucky you, being the oldest. I had 3 other brothers who got dibs on clothes before me. They were practically threads by the time I got them, but that's how it is when money's tight."
He self-consciously touched the red fabric at his neck. Money's still tight, but I couldn't pass this up. It proves something to the world. Plus, I got a good deal. Why, Tamsin, what's this? Are you smiling at me?
I just understand it, that's all.
He smiled too. It had a different quality than Gideon's. Gideon's was more polished and practiced. It made you feel good because of its beauty. Jago's made you feel good because you wanted to keep smiling back.
But, he said, you still don't trust me.
Of course not. I barely know you. With the goods repacked, we stood up and walked to the door.
Well, Orla recommended me, didn't she?
Yes, but I don't really know her either. Can I trust her? Can I trust the Ikori? Sometimes I can't even believe this plan is contingent on traveling with Ikori. I'm so anxious to get to Cape Triumph that it's the least of my worries. But if you'd suggested 1 month ago that I'd go on a river trip with Ikori, I'd have thought you were crazy.
It all came out in a burst, but Jago pondered it very seriously.
Don't believe the propaganda. Most Ikori are trying to do what's right and get along in the world, just like everyone else. Can you trust every Ikori? No. No more than you can trust every Osfridian. But I'm telling you, though, if it's in Orla's power, she'll see it through. She's a good friend to have.
I'm glad, but it sounds like you're saying I should trust her because you trust her, and I should trust you because she trusts you, and, well, you see where the logic starts to break down.
And yet, here you are.
I shrugged and stepped aside so that he could open the door. Here I am, because you're pretty much the only help I've got right now.
Jago turned the knob and flashed me one of those smiles. Trust me. I'm the only help you need.
Chapter 14. I made it back to the church in time for the second half of services, and no one aside from the glittering court girls had noticed my absence. The only punishment I faced was self-inflicted. I'd miss lunch. By the time we piled back into Jago's sleigh, I was dizzy with hunger. He drove us home, declining Samuel's stiff invitation for supper. Again, Jago gallantly helped each of us down. Clasping my hand, he examined both sides of it.
If you're worried about your hands, you should wear your mittens more often.
I lost them. I watched Dinah's back as she entered the house. But I'll let my fingers freeze off before I let her know. She'll have me writing about negligence using my own blood.
Well, let's hope it doesn't come to either one of those ends.
He checked the horse's bridles and then hopped back up to his seat.
I'm going to head out early tomorrow to see Lewis.
How long will that all take?
Depends if I make any stops, but I'll be back within the week, either way.
The thought of his absence from town made me feel oddly alone. We had too few allies, and despite Jago's quirks, it was comforting to have another outsider around.
What a lovely service, Dinah told Gideon at supper that night. I don't think I've ever heard Euros's truth put so eloquently. Fear is a cage, and we are our own jailers. I can't get those words out of my head.
Me either, I chimed in. Gideon wouldn't look at me. But a smile flickered over his face.
It was an excellent message, Samuel agreed. Ned and Lowell spoke to me about it afterward, remarking on your progress. Next time, you need to encourage people to succeed, but also make them understand the dire consequences of not succeeding.
When I retired for bed later, my friends immediately clustered around me and demanded to know where I'd disappeared to.
I can't tell you, I said, eliciting groans. It's not all settled, and even though I trust you, I can't risk it accidentally getting out yet.
Vanessa flounced on her bed with a pout.
Can't you tell us anything?
I paused in unbuttoning my overdress.
Well, I brought you a present. It's in my cloak.
Vanessa dove for it and pulled the novel out.
I've been dying to read this. Where did you get it?
You're better off not knowing.
I hope you'll share that,
Damaris said, leaning over Vanessa's shoulder.
Of course, after I finish it.
Vanessa clutched the book to her chest. Beaming, she told me.
Tamsin, you have no idea how glad I am that you get things done.
Although no new snow fell overnight, the roads still weren't fully cleared the next morning. A neighbour drove us to town in his sleigh, and I found myself looking forward to the day, despite its labour. The last 2 days had been stifling, and I was glad to have the freedom of my own schedule again. After the neighbour delivered us to the town square, Gideon offered to walk with me to Chester's.
You really helped me out with that sermon.
You did all the work. That delivery was incredible.
Because I had the right words. You really know how to get through to people. A gift like that.
He straightened his hat and gazed at the morning activity in the square.
Well, it's something you should do on a regular basis.
Somehow, I don't think I'll have many chances to do it in Cape Triumph.
You could do it if you stayed here.
His eyes turned downward as he kicked at the snow.
Is there any reason, any person, that might persuade you to accept this way of life?
What? No. Well, maybe if the angels themselves came down and... The sight of his serious mien drew me up short.
I'm sorry, he said quickly. I shouldn't have... No, I'm sorry. It was out of line. It was...
We both stopped trying to talk over each other, falling silent at the same time. Then our eyes met, and we started laughing.
It must sound crazy to you, he said. We've known each other for, what, just over a week? But I'm telling you, these moments with you have been some of the happiest in my life.
I watched admiringly as he ran a hand through his hair, the pale winter sunlight turning it to burnished gold. I couldn't help a pang of wistfulness. He was terribly good-looking and kind. Gideon, I don't know what to say. I've loved spending time with you too. I think you're the only bright spot in this town. He vehemently shook his head.
No, there's more to it than you realize, I swear. If you could just give it a try and really open yourself up to it, I think you'd see what I see. I know the dazzle of Cape Triumph and its wealth are alluring, but it's all a pretense. You have a radiant spirit, Tamsin. Do you really want to cover that up by being around others who don't?
A radiant spirit? No man had ever said such a thing to me, not even Harry, back in the days when every word out of his mouth had been worthy of a love poem. It means so much that you think of me that way. Not many have, I added, a catch in my voice. And I'll be honest, I don't think many people around here share that opinion.
That's just because you've been living with the Coles. If you and I were...
He cleared his throat, red flooding his cheeks.
If you were my wife, running your own household, things would be a lot different. And you saw how powerful that sermon was. With your help, I could really get through to people. We could inspire them instead of scaring them.
I'd love to see that, I said sincerely. And if things were simple for me, well, who could say? But they're not.
I'm committed to an expensive marriage contract and have a lot of complicated things in my life to look after.
Do you understand what I'm saying?
I do.
Though he was disappointed, his eyes glowed with an inner light.
But knowing you think well of me, even a little, makes me happy.
I think well of you a lot. We stood like that a few more moments, wrapped in a warm sort of contentment.
I suppose I shouldn't keep you, he said at last. We'll talk more later.
Of course. His unexpected proposal left me with a flood of conflicting emotions as I walked to Chester's. Who could have seen that coming? Damaris would have probably claimed she had, I thought wryly. I felt guilty for refusing him, and even guiltier that I wasn't head over heels in love with him, not that I expected to be with anyone I married. I did care about him, though. Gideon was an amazing person, and I'd be lucky to find a man half as good and kind. If he'd spoken to me like that in a Cape Triumph ballroom, his pockets full of gold for Jasper, I'd have probably said yes in an instant. I was so distracted that I didn't even notice the small cloth bundle on Chester's kitchen table until after I'd made my first round of laundry pickups. Sometimes, if he had leftovers, Chester would leave me a biscuit or piece of cheese. Touched by his thoughtfulness, I unwrapped the cloth and found mittens. I tried them on wonderingly, trying to identify their unbelievably soft, black material. Cashmere? Angora? How could it feel like silk and still be so warm? Along their cuffs, tiny silver beads had been stitched with exquisite care, like a sprinkle of stars across the night sky. But when I put my arms down, my dress's sleeves settled over the cuffs, concealing that taboo glamour. "Oh, Jago," I murmured, "I suppose you think you're being clever." Maybe he was. Anyone glancing at me wouldn't think I wore anything but a respectable pair of Gratian-approved mittens. Unable to help a smile, I tucked them into a cloak pocket, unsure if I'd risk wearing them. Even if I didn't, it made my steps a little quicker and my heart a little lighter, knowing I was carrying a secret bit of sparkle with me. A few days later, an overnight storm dropped enough snow on the roads to snarl travel again, reminding me again that winter still had us in its grasp. We were dreading an arduous walk to town that morning when, luckily, a sleigh-owning neighbour came by and offered a ride. As we gathered our things, Dinah suddenly came thundering down the kitchen stairs and roared, "What is this?" Samuel, reading papers in the sitting room, leapt to his feet. "Dinah Cole, control your volume!" Dinah rushed up to him, her eyes blazing with fervid outrage. "Look! Look what I found!" She threw something to the floor. It hit with a loud thump, and I clamped a hand over my mouth to hide a gasp. It was the pilfered novel. Samuel picked it up, leafed through the pages, and then slowly raised his eyes. Whereas Dinah had reacted without restraint, he spoke with a chilling, more frightening control. "Where did this monstrosity come from?" Dinah pointed up.
"It was in the attic. I found it when I went up to retrieve Gideon's book."
I had no chance to feel affronted at Dinah's borrowing my borrowed book, because the horror of what else had happened was too overwhelming. Vanessa was supposed to hide the novel before going to sleep, and she must have forgotten last night, and I'd forgotten to check. Now, standing beside me, her face was so ashen, I thought she might faint. By then, the racket had brought Gideon out of his room. Samuel strode over to my friends and me, holding up the book.
"Whose is this?"
he asked, in that impossibly emotionless way. I wet my lips, ready to speak, but Vanessa had shaken off her shock.
"Mine, sir."
Incredulous, I began. "No,
it's mine,"
she said more loudly, shooting me a glare.
"I wanted something to read."
Samuel gestured toward the mantel, with its multiple copies of scripture.
"There are plenty of things to read."
"I just wanted something different to read."
"Vanessa," I tried. "Quiet, Tamsin." This time it was Samuel who cut me off.
"Those books are the only things you need to read. Trash like this is prohibited."
Vanessa's collected countenance faltered.
"Did I break the law?"
The dam on his anger burst. "You broke a moral prescript. You brought wickedness into this household."
Samuel spun around and hurled the book into the fireplace. Aghast, I made it halfway across the room before Gideon caught hold of my arm. "Tamsin, let it go." My chest ached as I watched the burning pages. I felt like crying. What a waste.
"Yes," said Samuel. "A waste of paper and leather. A waste of time. A waste of your thoughts. Novels like that encourage recklessness and abandonment of principles. Now, tell me where it came from."
Vanessa didn't know, of course, but she answered promptly.
I found it.
Found it? Scoffed Dinah. You don't find a book like that lying around here. Her father held up a hand to silence her.
I'll handle this. Spiritual discipline is my domain.
But Dinah is right. You didn't find that book here.
Vanessa lowered her gaze. No, sir. I found it while I was walking home one day. There's a half-built barn over on the North Road. I got curious and went to explore it. I found this in a bag there.
I have trouble believing that, he said. I pray to the angels you aren't adding lying to your list of transgressions.
Gideon shifted, his eyes growing troubled. That's the Erskine barn, isn't it? He had those men from South Joyce working on it last fall. The ones that ran off? They weren't really known for their exemplary behaviour.
Yes, but they also weren't really known for reading, either.
Samuel stared hard at Vanessa for a long moment.
If this really happened a few days ago, why didn't you bring the book to us immediately?
When Vanessa didn't answer, Dinah was all too happy to.
Because she knew it was wrong. She knew we'd take it away.
Jerking my arm from Gideon's, I took a few steps forward.
None of this is true. It's my fault. I found the book.
Yes, you found it. Vanessa looked up at me, her expression woeful but serene.
And you tried to tell me to do the right thing.
Samuel glanced between us.
What are you talking about?
Tamsin found the book in the attic and wanted to take it to you. I begged her to wait and said that I'd do it myself, but I didn't. Now she's trying to take the blame.
Vanessa! I exclaimed.
Samuel's eyes bugged out, his contempt filling the room.
You lied to her, were deceitful to us, and purposely concealed corrupt literature. This cannot be treated lightly.
He waved the rest of us toward the door.
Get to your jobs. I will not allow someone so degenerate to mingle with this good town's citizens, especially its children. Tamsin, take over her duties at the school today. The laundry can be delayed.
But
Damaris practically dragged me out the front door as I tried to protest.
Vanessa made her choice, Tamsin. She's being punished for what I did, I hissed.
You didn't leave the book out.
It's still my...
You'll just get both of you in trouble,
Winifred interjected.
And we need you to get us out of here. She stepped up to take the fall. Let her.
The anger and indignation burning in my chest distracted me all day as I tried to do Vanessa's job, assisting at the town's school. Normally, that duty would have been a pleasure, but my mind kept straying to Vanessa as I walked around the classroom, tutoring the children as needed and making sure they stayed on task. I missed spelling errors while proofreading compositions, and once I showed a girl how to use addition for a subtraction problem. The schoolmistress gave me a disgusted look and muttered,
I hope Vanessa's back soon, or that we at least get a better scholar to fill in.
When I arrived home in the evening, Vanessa wasn't there. We learned she'd been taken to town and was completing solitary penitence at one of the magistrate's houses.
She'll spend 3 days alone in a room with modest amenities, Samuel told us gravely. She will speak to no one. Her only companions will be the holy books, and she will prepare a statement of atonement to be read aloud at this week's service.
We'd heard a few statements of atonements in church. One had been from a woman accused of too much pride because she'd boasted about how her family's cow was the most beautiful in Constancy. Another atoner had been a man who'd gotten hold of some contraband wine, probably from Jago, and accidentally walked into his neighbour's house, thinking it was his. The man had apparently gone right to the kitchen table, sat down, and demanded dinner. My friends and I had tried not to giggle at the drama surrounding such silly-sounding confessions, but now, the thought of Vanessa having to stand in front of all those judgmental faces and humiliate herself left us stricken. I longed to talk to Gideon, certain that he could help,
This was a moral matter, not a domestic one. It was his domain. But he was swamped with work one of the other ministers had just given him, and all I could do was vent to Winifred and Damaris at bedtime. When Vanessa returned on the third day, she looked as though she'd been away for 3 months. Her face was wan, and dark hollows shadowed her eyes. She hadn't bathed or changed clothes, and she was thinner than when we'd first arrived in Constancy, after a week of strict rations. She tried to put on a cheerful front, assuring the rest of us, especially me, that her confinement hadn't been so bad.
It was a break from Dinah's nagging. I might as well have been on holiday.
But Vanessa couldn't leave the Cole house until her atonement in church later that week. I found out that in addition to her confession, she would have to arrive early and sit outside the square wearing a sign that said, Deceit. It wouldn't be removed until after her humiliating confession. The more I heard about it, the more I seethed. The town that had been merely irritating before had become something sinister. We needed to get out. After nearly a week with no word from Jago, I decided one afternoon to find out if he'd even made it home yet. Working in the school restricted the freedom I'd once had to wander town, and I had to wait until late afternoon before I could hurry off down the winding creek road. No one answered when I made it to his door, but as I turned to leave, a huge mountain of a man came ambling out of one of the barns. For a terrified moment, I thought some criminal was raiding Jago's property, but the man casually held a rake against his shoulder and gave me a friendly wave. Hesitantly, I approached. After a few fumbled communication attempts, I learned that the man was Belgian and worked for Jago. He spoke little Ospridian, and the Larandian I knew, though similar to Belgian, wasn't enough for anything extensive.
"Ah, no," he said, tapping his chest. He had to be around 7 feet tall.
A grin split his bearded face. "I'm Tamsin. Is Mr. Robinson here?" He pointed west.
"Mr. Robinson left away."
"Away from Constancy?"
"Yes, to visit."
"When will he be back? How many days?"
Arnaud shrugged, but I couldn't tell if he didn't know the answer or just didn't know what I'd said.
"When you see him, can you tell him Tamsin came by? Tell him I'm desperate to talk to him."
"Yes, yes, I will tell him. Tamsin is desperate for you, Mr. Robinson."
That's not quite what I had in mind, but if it gets him to me, it'll do. Thank you, Arnaud."
"Goodbye, Miss Tamsin."
He returned to his chores, whistling.
A bitter wind blew around me on the walk home, and I slipped on the black mittens. Even without a blizzard, it was always cold around here.
Really, I felt as if I'd never properly warmed up since setting foot on the Grey Gull. Cape Triumph, rumoured to be hot and balmy in the summer, seemed to be on the other side of the world from this dreary place. It was like Grashand was intent on wearing down both my body and mind.
"I hope you're as great a deal-maker as you say, Jago," I murmured to myself, "because I don't know how much more of this I can take."
Chapter 15. The following day, a leak in the school's roof forced us to relocate to the meeting house. Labourers were still finishing its interior, but the great building had more than enough room for us to work on our lessons. The cargo I'd raided with Jago had been pushed farther to the back and covered in tarps, but otherwise appeared undisturbed. I couldn't help but note the irony of having it right in front of me after the caper we'd had to pull off during church. The townsmen were installing shelves today, and we frequently found ourselves shouting to hear one another over the hammering. So it wasn't that shocking when the schoolmistress developed a headache so severe that she had to go home early. It was mid-afternoon by that point, and she instructed me to just read aloud from one of the holy books. I chose a particularly exciting passage I'd discovered in the Reuven Followers, about a woman who, full of devotion to Euros and the angels, successfully organized Reuver's defense against invaders. I'd never heard it before, and judging by my students' rapt faces, most of them hadn't either. And as the hammering continued to interrupt me, it became unlikely they'd ever hear it. Finally, frustrated, I shut the book and was on the verge of dismissing them early when Gideon walked in the front door. I passed Mistress Darcy as I was leaving the church. His expression grew warmer as he looked over the children. I thought maybe you'd all like to go sledding for the end of your school day. Excitement rippled through them, and they quickly gathered their things. Is that allowed? I asked in a low voice. What, playing? Having fun? I gave him a pointed look. Well, it's not like I've seen very much of that in my time here. He sobered a little. Which is part of why I'm here. I wanted to talk to you. I know you haven't been very happy recently. How can I be? I asked as we walked outside. Gideon paused briefly to pick up some bark sleds leaning against the building. One of my friends is being humiliated unjustly. The children, freed of schoolroom formality, scampered around us, some running ahead to a location apparently known to all. Gideon watched them fondly as he contemplated his answer. Is it unjust?
She didn't do anything wrong.
She lied. She read a book she wasn't supposed to, and hid it because she knew she wasn't supposed to read it. It took all my self-control to keep quiet about my role. It's just a book. A book that glamorizes many of the things we try to avoid. Gambling, drinking, stealing, vanity, infidelity, insubordination. But it's not advocating them. Not exactly. The book's hero was a displaced prince who became the champion of an oppressed city and helped launch a rebellion. His lady love was the wife of the city's ruling tyrant, a cruel man eventually killed in a sword fight with the dashing prince. Perhaps not, said Gideon, but some might not see it that way. It could give them ideas and tempt them into trying something wayward. We'd passed outside of Constance's heart and now walked through a copse of snow-covered pines. So you just get rid of anything that might make them think of doing something wrong. People don't need an example to fall into bad ways. They can do it on their own. Oh, I know. But there are some who never would have had dangerous ideas on their own. Surrounding ourselves in only the finest behavior prevents straying and shows people that it's possible to live in a righteous way. He sounded so nice and reasonable, which made it hard to take my anger out on him. Also, he was dressed in a shade of grey today that brought out the blue in his eyes. It would almost have been a distraction if I weren't so worked up over Vanessa. Everyone's overreacting, I insisted. And it's really depressing that you can't read fiction here. We can. There's actually a small collection of acceptable books with stories that completely align with our beliefs. It must be a very small collection. We stopped atop a high hill with a long, gentle slope leading down to a meadow scattered with more trees. The snow blanketing it all was smooth and unbroken, and the children excitedly prepped their sleds. Gideon studied them a moment and then turned to me, his face drawn. Tamsin, I don't want to argue with you. Not that this isn't important, but... He gestured to the kids. Perhaps this isn't the place. I sighed. You're right. I don't want to ruin their fun. The children raced down the hill, some on sleds and some just tumbling down on their own. They'd laugh and help each other up, then trek back up the hill. Despite my woes, I couldn't stop from smiling at the sight of those rosy cheeks and excited eyes. I wouldn't have thought those sleds could get such speed, I remarked. Too fast for you? Gideon teased. Hardly. His lips quirked into a smile. Is that so? Agatha, Winston, bring that sled back up for Miss Wright. Wait a minute, I began. My protests were lost in their whoops of joy, and I gathered it wasn't common for adults to join their sledding. There was no way I could turn them down now. I took up most of the space on the sled they handed over, but one small girl managed to squeeze her way in front of me. We zoomed down the hill with cries of glee, though my weight threw off our balance at the end and the sled tipped over. The girl and I flew off, with me hitting the snow headfirst. I brushed it out of my face, laughing, and helped her stand. Are you okay? I asked. She regarded me with enormous eyes. Are you?
I've never seen a grown-up dive into the snow like that.
Although she was a few years older than Mary, the girl's blue eyes and round cheeks reminded me so much of my daughter that I suddenly felt a searing pain in my chest, like some unseen hand was trying to tear my heart out. And when she shook the snow out of her brown hair, the sun spiked it with glints of gold, very much like Adelaide's hair would do. The fist on my heart grew tighter and tighter. Where was Adelaide now? The star of every party? Already engaged? And what about Mira? Was she still going through the motions of the glittering court, always watchful for a way out? In my mind, my two friends had endless possibilities stretching out before them. And me? I was stuck. I closed my eyes and took a deep breath. I've got to get a grip, or I'm going to lose my mind. Focus, Tamsin. It's the only way to get what you want.
Are you okay?
My eyes blinked open, and I forced a smile back on for my little companion. Of course I am, I told her. And I bet you've never seen a grown-up do this, either. I put on my mittens and made a snowball that I promptly hurled into Gideon's arm as he trudged down the side of the hill. He peered around, shocked, trying to figure out which student had done it. By the time he realized it was me, I was already launching a second snowball. He was ready, though, and deftly dodged my throw. He quickly made a snowball of his own, and before long, our whole party was engaged in battle. All right, Gideon said, when everyone was breathless and covered in snow. Time to wrap up the warfare. We need to get back to town soon. The eldest boy in the group ran up to him.
But, Mr. Stewart, can we please go see if the pond is still frozen first?
Gideon, kneeling to help a small girl shake snow out of her hood, glanced further across the plain. I could see a large grey indentation in the snow just before the forest really took hold.
I don't see why not. But listen, nobody can go on the ice until Miss Wright and I make sure it's safe. Do you understand?
Murmurs of assent answered him. We broke our way through the snow and reached the pond, which shimmered in the late afternoon sun. The girl who had sledded with me clapped her hands.
It looks just like silver.
It sure does, said Gideon, walking the pond's circumference.
He found a fallen branch and began tapping different portions of the ice.
No human artist can match the beauty Euros creates, especially with winter as a canvas.
Did Euros use a paintbrush?
Asked one small boy, eliciting giggles from others. Gideon stopped his inspection of the ice and regarded the group before him. All of them had gone quiet and serious as their little faces looked up at him.
Euros used something even better. His will. He used it to create everything you see around you. Every bird, every snowflake, every wisp of cloud. Each one was created with meticulous thought and care. And do you know what Euros's greatest, most perfect masterpiece is? Gideon waited a beat. All of you.
This brought astonishment to some of them, skepticism to others.
But not all people are great or perfect. Euros made a mistake, said one girl.
Euros doesn't make mistakes, Dora. His plan is flawless. The mistakes happen because of us.
A boy standing beside me mustered his courage to say,
How?
An impromptu discussion followed, and Gideon answered their questions patiently and respectfully, making sure everyone felt valued. He had no difficulty expressing his thoughts and looked far more at ease in the snow than he had at the podium. Eventually sensing his little congregation's restlessness returning, Gideon gave them his blessing to go to the pond. They all approached it differently, some crawling or sitting, while others boldly strode out as if they wore skates. Some kept their balance, others not so much. He and I walked together, keeping an eye on them, but also separating ourselves enough to speak quietly.
You're good with them. You teach them about faith much better than you do adults. I can't tell if that's a compliment.
You understand how to get through to them. A boy came up to me, begging help to retie his scarf. I knelt down, using the opportunity to reflect on Gideon's manner. When the boy left, I remarked, "Actually, I think you can get through to anyone." That would have made a fine lesson for adults,